A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Here's what Daniel wants to know. He's been looking at how internet is sold above the consumer tier, and he noticed something. At the consumer level, you buy a speed, 1 gig, 2 gig, whatever the package says. But above that, the product stops being a number on a web form and becomes a contract. He's asking how fiber bandwidth is actually packaged and priced at that level right now. And what a typical service level agreement on one of those circuits genuinely guarantees. Not the marketing, not the sales pitch, the real commitments in the fine print.
This is one of those topics where the thing you think you're buying and the thing you're actually buying are almost completely different. The contract is the product. The bandwidth is almost a side effect.
Say more.
When you buy consumer fiber, you're buying access to a shared pipe. The provider runs a GPON network. Gigabit passive optical network, where one fiber from the exchange gets split passively to serve 32 or 64 premises. They sell you 1 gig, but that's the maximum the port can do, not a guarantee. At 3 in the morning, when nobody's online, you might get it. At 8 in the evening, when the whole street is streaming, you won't.
And above that tier, you stop sharing.
That's the shift. The product category is called Dedicated Internet Access, DIA. It's a circuit where the bandwidth is yours alone. Symmetric, so 100 meg up and 100 meg down, all the way to 10 gig or more. The fiber from your building runs back to the provider's point of presence, and you get a committed information rate, ACIRT, ACIR. That's guaranteed.
So the 100 meg is a floor, not a ceiling.
And that's the first thing people get wrong when they see the price. A 100 meg DIA circuit can cost more than a 1 gig consumer line, and they think they're being ripped off. They're not. They're buying 100 meg that's always 100 meg with an SLA wrapped around it.
Let's get into the packaging then. What does a DIA quote actually look like?
It's built around three things. The committed information rate, the guaranteed minimum bandwidth, the port speed, the physical capacity of the interface, usually higher than the CIR so you can burst above it, and the access tail, the local loop, the fiber from the exchange to your building. The CIR and port speed are priced per meg, and the access tail is priced based on distance and whether fiber already passes the building.
Distance. So a circuit across town costs less than one across the country.
Considerably less. If the provider already has fiber in the ground near you, the build cost is low. If they have to trench new fiber, the quote jumps. I've seen quotes where the monthly recurring charge for the bandwidth was maybe $800, but the access tail added another $2,000 a month because the building was 3 miles from the nearest splice point.
And this is all on a term contract?
1 to 3 years, typically. Early termination fees if you cancel. The provider is amortizing the build cost over the term, so they need that commitment. But the contract isn't really about the bandwidth, it's about the SLA. The service level agreement is what you're paying for. The bandwidth is the delivery mechanism for the SLA.
So walk me through what a typical SLA actually says.
The headline number is always uptime. 99.9%, 99.99, sometimes 5/9, 99.999%. And those numbers sound impressive until you do the arithmetic.
Do the arithmetic.
99.9% uptime allows for 43 minutes and 49 seconds of downtime per month. 99.99% brings it down to about 52 minutes per year. 5/9 is 5 minutes and 15 seconds per year.
So the difference between 3/9 and 4/9 is the difference between we can be down for most of a lunch break every month, and we can be down for less than an hour a year.
And the price difference between those two tiers can be enormous. Double, triple. You're paying for the engineering redundancy that makes the higher number possible. Diverse fiber paths, backup power, multiple upstream peers.
But the percentage is measured how?
It's measured over a billing period, usually a month or a quarter, not per incident. So if your circuit goes down for 40 minutes on a Tuesday, that's within the 99.9% allowance for the month. The provider hasn't breached anything. The outage gets absorbed by the averaging.
And if it goes down for 40 minutes every Tuesday?
Still might not breach if the other weeks are clean. The monthly total stays under 43 minutes. You can have a circuit that fails reliably every Friday afternoon for a year, and the provider's SLA performance looks perfect on paper.
That seems like a pretty significant gap between what the number implies and what it actually delivers.
It's the gap the whole product is built on, and it gets wider when you look at repair time. The SLA will specify a mean time to repair, MTTR, typically 4 to 8 hours for a business DIA circuit. But the clock starts when you report the fault, not when the circuit goes down.
So, if it fails at 2 in the morning, and nobody notices until 8, the clock starts at 8.
And if your monitoring didn't catch it, or the provider's own monitoring didn't flag it, those 6 hours don't count. The SLA only covers the period between the trouble ticket opening and the provider saying it's fixed. And fixed can mean a temporary workaround. They reroute you over a backup path that's slower, or they patch a failing piece of equipment that's going to fail again next week. The SLA doesn't require a permanent fix, just a return to service.
What does the customer actually get if the SLA is breached?
A credit on their bill. And this is where it gets almost insulting. The credit is typically a percentage of the monthly recurring charge for the affected circuit. 10% is common. Sometimes it scales, 10% for the first hour beyond the SLA, another 10 for each additional hour, capped at 50% of the monthly fee.
So, if a business is losing thousands of dollars a minute because their circuit is down, the compensation is a fraction of the monthly bill.
And it's not automatic. You have to notice the breach, document it, submit the claim, and argue with the provider if they dispute the timing. Most businesses don't bother for a 10% credit on a $1,200 circuit. $120 isn't worth the time it takes to file the paperwork.
The SLA is designed to be mostly unclaimed.
It's a risk transfer mechanism dressed as a guarantee. The provider caps their liability at a fraction of the service cost, and the customer carries the actual business risk. The SLA doesn't insure you against losses. It just gives you a small refund if the service was bad enough to cross a threshold that's hard to cross.
What about the things the SLA doesn't cover at all?
Latency and jitter are the big ones. Most standard DIA SLAs don't guarantee them, or they guarantee them so loosely the numbers are meaningless. They might say, latency under 50 milliseconds within the provider's network. But that excludes the internet beyond their border, which is where most latency problems live. Jitter, the variation in packet arrival time, is critical for voice and video, and it's almost never in the SLA.
And the last mile?
Often excluded. The SLA might cover the provider's core network and their point of presence, but the local loop is frequently carved out. They'll call it access tail or local distribution, and note that it's subject to separate maintenance terms. Which is absurd because the local loop is where most physical failures happen. A backhoe in the street, a flooded vault, a damaged splice. That's the part most likely to break, and the SLA often doesn't cover it.
So you're buying a guarantee on the part that's least likely to fail, and the part that actually breaks is excluded.
That's the shape of it. There's also force majeure, the clause that voids the SLA during events beyond the provider's control. Storms, floods, power grid failures, fiber cuts by third parties. And maintenance windows. Scheduled downtime doesn't count against the SLA, and the provider gets to define what's scheduled. Some contracts require 48 hours notice, others just say reasonable notice. It always does. And then there's the reasonable efforts, language around repair. The provider commits to using reasonable efforts to restore service within the MTTR window. If they can't, because a part is out of stock or a technician is unavailable, that's not a breach. They made reasonable efforts. The SLA is full of escape hatches.
Let's talk about what else comes with a DIA circuit beyond the SLA. Daniel mentioned static IP allocations and BGP.
Right. A consumer connection gives you a dynamic IP address that changes periodically, and you're stuck behind carrier-grade NAT in a lot of cases. A DIA circuit comes with a block of static public IP addresses, typically a /29 or larger, so 8 or more usable addresses. You can run your own servers, your own mail infrastructure, your own VPN endpoints. And if you're a larger organization, you can bring your own autonomous system number and run BGP, Border Gateway Protocol, with the provider.
Which means you're advertising your own IP space and managing your own routing.
You're effectively a small ISP at that point. The provider gives you a BGP session, and you control how your traffic enters and leaves their network. That's a completely different product from anything in the consumer space. It comes with technical requirements. You need staff who understand BGP. You need your own IP allocations from a regional internet registry. But for a business that needs multi-homed connectivity or wants to switch providers without renumbering their entire network, it's essential.
How do you tell the difference between a real DIA circuit and a consumer product with a business label?
The quote tells you. A real DIA quote will specify the CIR, the port speed, the access tail cost, the SLA terms including MTTR and the credit schedule, the IP allocation, and whether BGP is available. A business broadband product, which is what a lot of small business fiber actually is, will quote a speed tier with an up to, qualifier, no CIR, no MTTR commitment, and an SLA that's basically will try to fix it during business hours.
Up to is the tell.
Up to means you're on a shared GPON or similar architecture. The provider has sold that same capacity to dozens of other businesses in your area. At peak times, you get whatever is left. The price is lower, maybe $150 a month instead of $1,200, but the product is fundamentally different. It's consumer infrastructure with a business support phone number. The way to spot it's to ask two questions. One, is the bandwidth symmetric and guaranteed? Two, what's the MTTR commitment? If they can't answer both with specific numbers, it's not DIA.
Let's talk about how this market has shifted. You mentioned prices dropping.
The overbuild has been significant. In a lot of metro areas, there are now three or four providers with fiber in the ground, the incumbent telco, a cable operator, and one or two competitive providers who built out during the low interest rate years. That competition has pushed DIA prices down. A 1-gig DIA circuit that might have cost $3,000 a month 10 years ago can be had for under $1,000 in some markets now.
But the SLAs have standardized.
That's the trade-off. As prices dropped, the SLAs converged. Most providers now offer essentially the same terms. 99.99% uptime, 4-hour MTTR, 10% credit per incident. The differentiation isn't in the SLA anymore, it's in the extras. Proactive monitoring where the provider detects and responds to issues before you report them. 24/7 support with a named account manager. Online portals where you can see circuit performance in real time.
And the rise of SD-WAN has changed what the SLA is worth.
This is the knock-on effect that's really reshaping the market. SD-WAN, software-defined wide area networking, let you bond multiple circuits together and route traffic dynamically based on performance. A typical setup might be a DIA circuit as the primary, a cheap broadband line as secondary, and an LTE or 5G failover as tertiary. The SD-WAN box monitors latency, jitter, and packet loss on each link in real time, and if the DIA circuit degrades, it shifts traffic to the backup automatically.
So the SLA on the DIA circuit becomes less critical, because the circuit isn't a single point of failure anymore.
If your SD-WAN setup can fail over and under a second, you can tolerate a DIA circuit that goes down occasionally. You might even choose a cheaper circuit with a weaker SLA, because the redundancy handles it. The SLA shifts from being insurance against downtime to being a negotiating point on price.
Which means the provider's SLA is competing with the customer's own redundancy architecture.
And the customer's redundancy is often cheaper than the premium for a higher tier SLA. Why pay double for 5 nines when you can get 2 3-9 circuits from different providers for less money and have actual diversity? The SD-WAN box doesn't care about the SLA. It cares about whether packets are getting through.
That seems like it'd push providers toward application-level guarantees eventually.
That's where it's heading, the as-a-service model. Instead of selling you a circuit with an SLA, they sell you a connectivity outcome. Your voice traffic will have less than 20 milliseconds of latency and 0.1% packet loss. The underlying infrastructure could be anything, fiber, fixed wireless, satellite. The provider manages the mix and you just buy the result.
Which is a whole new set of fine print to worry about.
It is. Now the measurement becomes the product. How do they measure latency? From where to where? Over what time period? What's the sampling interval? Every one of those parameters can be tuned to make the numbers look better than they are. It's the same game in a different wrapper.
So the core dynamic doesn't change. The contract is still the product.
It always is. The technology changes, the packaging changes, but the fundamental tension is the same. The buyer wants a guarantee that the service will work. The seller wants to limit their liability when it doesn't. The SLA is the document that negotiates that tension, and it's always going to be written by the seller's lawyers.
Let's put some concrete numbers around this. If I'm a business buying a 1 gig DIA circuit with a 99.99% SLA and a 4-hour MTTR, what am I actually holding?
You're holding a circuit that delivers a symmetric gigabit with a committed information rate of probably 800 meg, maybe the full gig if you paid for it. You've got a block of static IPs, probably 8 or 16. You can run BGP if you want. Your SLA allows for about 52 minutes of downtime per year, measured monthly. If the circuit goes down, the provider commits to having someone working on it within 4 hours of your call. If they breach the uptime target, you can claim a credit, probably 10% of the monthly fee, maybe scaling to 50% if it's really bad.
And the monthly fee is what?
In a competitive metro market in 2026, probably $800 to $1,500 a month on a one-year term, depending on the access tail. Cheaper if you commit to 3 years. More if you're in a building that needs new fiber pulled.
And the business impact of an outage?
Depends entirely on the business. For an e-commerce operation doing $50,000 an hour in revenue, an 8-hour outage is a $400,000 problem. The SLA credit on a $1,200 circuit is $120. The asymmetry is stark.
The SLA is an insurance. It's a rebate coupon.
That's exactly what it is. And it's a rebate coupon you have to remember to clip and mail in.
What about the things that aren't in the SLA at all? Packet loss, for instance.
Packet loss is a funny one. Some SLAs mention it, but the threshold is usually set high enough to be meaningless. 1%, sometimes higher. For comparison, a void call starts to degrade at about 1% packet loss. Video conferencing gets choppy at 0.5%. So an SLA that guarantees less than 1% packet loss is guaranteeing that your voice calls might work. That's not a guarantee.
And jitter?
Rarely specified. When it is, it's often something like less than 10 milliseconds of jitter within the provider's network. But jitter compounds. Every router hop adds variability. The provider's network might be clean, but the path to your cloud provider or your remote office crosses multiple networks, and none of those are covered.
So the SLA covers the part of the path the provider controls, which is the part least likely to be the problem.
And that's the structural limitation of any SLA. The provider can't guarantee the internet. They can only guarantee their piece of it. The SLA is a warranty on a component, not on the system.
Which brings us back to SD-WAN and multi-circuit setups. If the SLA only covers a component, the smart move is to stop treating that component as critical.
Right. Design your network so that no single circuit failure matters. Then the SLA becomes a nice-to-have rather than a must-have. You still want it. It keeps the provider honest and gives you some recourse, but you're not betting your business on it.
What should someone actually look for when they're reading one of these contracts?
4 things. 1. The measurement period, monthly or quarterly. Monthly is better. It limits how much downtime can accumulate before the SLA kicks in. 2. The credit calculation. Is it automatic or do you have to claim it? What's the percentage? Is there a cap? 3. The exclusions. What's carved out? Maintenance windows, force majeure, the local loop, know what's not covered. 4. The MTTR clock. When does it start? Who decides when the circuit is repaired? Is temporary restoration good enough?
And if the answers to those questions are vague, the SLA is vague.
If the provider won't put specific numbers in writing, the numbers don't exist. Industry standard uptime isn't a commitment. Best effort repair isn't a commitment. The SLA is only as strong as the specific, measurable commitments it contains. I think the thing that gets overlooked in all of this is that the SLA is fundamentally a relationship document. It defines what happens when things go wrong, and that definition shapes the entire vendor relationship. A provider with a weak SLA is telling you upfront that they don't expect to be held accountable. A provider with a strong SLA, one that has real teeth, automatic credits, tight MTTR, is telling you they've built a network and a support organization that can back it up.
The SLA is a signal.
It's a signal about how seriously they take their own infrastructure. If they're willing to guarantee 4-hour MTTR, they have technicians on call and spare parts in stock. If they won't commit to anything specific, they probably don't.
I was the guy with the spare parts. Or not, depending on the month.
Go on.
Late 90s. Regional ISP in Ohio. My title was Network Reliability Engineer, which meant I drove around in a van with a rack of switches and a crimping tool. The SLA for our business customers promised 4-hour MTTR. We had exactly 2 technicians for the entire metro area. If 2 circuits went down at the same time, one of them wasn't getting fixed in 4 hours.
What happened when you missed the window?
We wrote a lot of credits. 10% here, 10% there. The sales team didn't care. They'd already booked the contract. The credits came out of a different budget.
So the SLA was a sales tool, not an operations commitment.
The operations team didn't even know what the SLA said until someone filed a claim. I found out we had a 99.99% uptime guarantee when a customer read it to me over the phone while I was trying to figure out why their circuit was down. I had to ask him what the number meant.
What did you tell him?
I told him I'd be there in an hour. I was there in 3. He got his credit.
You mentioned a customer with a Friday problem.
Printing company. Their DIA circuit dropped every Friday at about 3 in the afternoon. Like clockwork. It had come back after 20 minutes, sometimes 30, never more than 40. This went on for 11 months.
It never breached the SLA.
40 minutes a month. The SLA allowed 43. We never paid a credit on that circuit, not once. The customer called every Friday. I drove out there 6 times. We replaced the CPE, we replaced the fiber patch, we checked the splice point. Nothing fixed it. Turned out to be a failing power supply in a street cabinet 3 blocks away. It'd overheat on warm afternoons, the voltage would sag, and the switch would reboot. Took us 11 months to find it.
The SLA said you were meeting your commitments the whole time.
Perfect record. 99.9% uptime every month for a circuit that failed every single week.
That's the averaging problem in one story.
The customer's business was losing about $2,000 every Friday. They couldn't process orders, couldn't send proofs to clients. Over 11 months, that's maybe $90,000 in lost revenue. The SLA would have paid them a maximum of 50% of their monthly fee, which was about $600. They never even got that, because the numbers stayed inside the line.
Did they stay with the provider?
They left the day the contract ended. Signed with a competitor who had a worse SLA on paper, but a better network in practice. The SLA didn't protect them. It protected us.
That's the thing about SLAs. They're a legal fiction that works in one direction. The provider defines the terms, measures the performance, and decides whether a breach occurred. The customer gets a document that looks like a guarantee, but functions as a liability cap.
My brother-in-law sells enterprise fiber now. Different company, same game. He told me once that the SLA is like a warranty on a car that only covers the tires. The engine is the thing that breaks, and the warranty doesn't cover the engine. But the customer sees warranty and feels safe.
Does he think it's dishonest?
He thinks it's business. The customer wants to feel protected. The provider wants to limit exposure. The SLA lets both sides pretend they're getting what they want. He says the customers who actually understand SLAs don't read them. They just buy 2 circuits from 2 different providers and call it a day.
That's the SD-WAN logic. Redundancy beats guarantees.
My brother-in-law says the smartest customers are the ones who treat the SLA as a tiebreaker between otherwise identical quotes. They don't expect it to save them. They expect it to tell them which provider has the better operations team. A tighter SLA means the provider is confident they can deliver. A loose one means they're not.
The SLA is still useful, just not for the reason it appears to be.
It's useful as a signal. As a contract, it's a coupon. My brother-in-law isn't a trustworthy man, but he's right about that.
The signal function is real. If a provider offers a 4-hour MTTR with automatic credits and no cap, they've invested in the infrastructure and staffing to back that up. If they offer best effort and vague uptime targets, they haven't. The SLA tells you what kind of organization you're dealing with before you sign.
Even if the specific numbers in it are gamed.
Even then. The gaming is predictable. The investment level isn't.
The question Daniel started with was how this stuff is packaged and priced. I think the answer is that it's packaged as a contract and priced as insurance, but the insurance doesn't cover what you think it covers.
The price is dropping while the contracts are standardizing. The market is mature enough now that the basic terms are table stakes. The interesting differentiation is happening in the monitoring, the support, the extras, and in the customer's own architecture, where SD-WAN and multi-circuit setups are making the SLA less relevant than it used to be.
Which raises the question of where this goes next. If SD-WAN becomes the default, and businesses routinely run two or three circuits from different providers, does the SLA on any single circuit matter at all?
It matters less, but it doesn't go to zero. There's still value in knowing that a provider will fix a broken circuit within a known window, even if you failed over to a backup. Redundancy reduces the stakes of the SLA, but doesn't eliminate them.
The shift toward application-level guarantees, connectivity as a service rather than circuits as a product, that could bring the SLA back to center stage in a different form.
It could. If the provider is on the hook for the actual application experience, the voice quality, the video clarity, the transaction completion rate, then the SLA becomes meaningful again. But that's a much harder product to deliver, and the measurement problems get even thornier. We'll probably be talking about that in 5 years.
For now, the lesson is that 99.9% uptime isn't a promise. It's a price tag. It tells you what tier of service you're buying, and it tells you what the provider is willing to put in writing. But if your business actually depends on the connection, you need something else. Redundancy, architecture, a plan for when the circuit goes down. The SLA won't save you.
The SLA is the document you read after the outage, while you're waiting for the credit that won't cover the damage. The real protection is what you build yourself.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com or email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.